Could you introduce yourself?
My name is Dino Cervantes. I'm the general manager of Cervantes Enterprises. I'm 43 years old. Kind of a native New Mexican, almost a native New Mexican, let's put it that way.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit about your operation here?
Cervantes Enterprises is a processor of Louisiana-style hot sauces. Typically, we're bringing fresh peppers from the field. We'll grind them up, and we'll make a base for what is used in Louisiana-style hot sauces. The one that everybody's real familiar with is Tabasco sauce, but there's a lot of other brands and labels out there, and we're kind of supply them with a base product for their products.
Okay. Would that be considered a value-added product, or is that?
Yeah, it would absolutely. From an agriculture standpoint, anything that's a raw material would be just, the chili peppers would go out of here once you start processing them a little bit. Whether it be chili peppers or onions or lettuce or anything else, it would be considered a value-added product.
Okay. And then, so I wanted to ask about agriculture traditionally in this area. Have there always been so many big pecans and...
Oh, it's kind of changed. There's agriculture has always been very big in the state, obviously, and it's a big part of the economy. But as markets change and as worldwide pressures kind of impact us a little bit, our cropping rotations have adjusted to kind of meet those demands. In the past, there's been a lot more row crops. Cotton is kind of a semi-new phenomenon in the areas that it is, but traditionally New Mexico has some climatic conditions that'll grow just about anything. We have warm enough summers that we have a great growing weather during the summertime, and then our winters get cold enough where we kill a lot of pests and diseases. So it gives us a leg up on a lot of other growing regions throughout the country. So we can grow about anything. It depends on what the markets dictate and some of the resources that we have as to what we do and don't grow.
Okay, and so you talk about global pressures. Mm-hmm. Have they increased over the years?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, labor costs and availability of labor, which was kind of a strength in New Mexico and gave us an advantage over other parts of the country. We've lost some of those advantages to foreign competition. So a lot of labor-intensive crops, a lot of vegetable crops, chili peppers, onions, lettuce, those types of things that have been grown here traditionally in larger quantities aren't being grown as much, and you're starting to see a lot more crops that are more mechanized, use less labor, or less dependent on labor. That's where the pecans kind of come about. They're a crop that that can be grown with a minimal amounts of labor, and for the most part are completely mechanized. Cotton kind of being the same thing, alfalfa kind of being the same thing. So the crops that are really have been kind of lost to our global competitors are the labor-intensive items.
Okay, so it's labor that's really the issue.
Labor's the issue. Obviously, water's kind of the pink elephant in the room that's kind of hanging out there that nobody knows how it's going to react to things. And depending on what our government officials think here in New Mexico, it's going to be there for a while until we kind of get that ironed out as well, which could, again, affect our cropping rotation.
And so are you on Oglala here? How do you irrigate here?
We have two options. We have surface water through the Rio Grande, the Elephant Butte Irrigation District, which manages the Rio Grande flows from Elephant Butte Irrigation or from Elephant Butte Dam down to the Texas border. They supply us with surface water, which again flows through the Rio Grande into our canal systems, and then it's provided to the agricultural grower. And then most farms, not all of them, but most farms have irrigation wells or supplemental wells that will supplement depending on how much surface water we have in a given year.
Okay. And you're using, like when you say the canals, you mean, is that the acequias?
Well, up north they would call them the acequias. Down here it's more of a canal system. It's very similar. Yeah. Here we have two, I think the differences are we have a canal system that's our water supply that brings water incoming off of the Rio Grande. Then we have drainage ditches, which actually takes water that has been flushed through our ground system back out of the system and restocks that water back into the Rio Grande downstream a little bit.
Okay. And you use the canal system?
Yes. Almost every agriculture producer down here uses the canal system.
Okay. Oh, I had understood. Did you say that most of them used the wells, but that's not.
No, the wells are more supplemental. Okay. Again, for example, right now we're kind of in a drought period. There's very little surface water available to us. So the pumps are being used extensively, as they were in the 50s and early 60s. But throughout the 80s and the major part of the 90s, the wells weren't used that extensively. Most of what we used was surface water.
Okay, and that is that with the Ogallala Aquifer? Or that's...
Well, the Ogallala Aquifer is on the east side, more so, and they would that's what they would pump out of they would pump out of that aquifer from their wells, and that's what they would use for their agricultural areas.
But that's
It's similar to what we do here. I mean, you have two types. You have the surface water, and then you have the subsurface water. The subsurface water has some characteristics that the surface doesn't, but it's typically a little bit more expensive because you've got the pumping to go along with it. The surface water, when available, is probably the most cost-effective way to irrigate in the valley. But, for example, the surface water isn't real viable when you're using it for drip irrigation systems or some of the irrigation technologies that we work through right now. So there's kind of give and take. It depends on what you're growing, what time of year you're needing to irrigate, and the climatic conditions, and that'll affect which one you want to use.
Okay. And I wanted to ask about traditional crops and traditionally here in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd said that it was mainly vegetables until the change. Did it change the amount of farms that were?
Well, I misspoke. Traditionally, the majority of the acreage in southern New Mexico has been the major crop has been cotton. Cotton's kind of been king down here, and there's various reasons for that. As far as from an acreage standpoint, it's always been a big part of the rotation, and continues to be. It's a low water user, little labor, and traditionally there's not a great deal of risk with cotton. You're going to get some crop out of it. Typically the return on cotton isn't as high as it could be on some other crops, but your risk factor isn't there either, so you kind of balance those things out. Vegetables traditionally have been a higher risk, higher return crop, so depending on the operation, those will be grown in smaller quantities, kind of like the stock market. You'll put a little bit, you know, maybe 20%, 10% into higher risk stocks than you would into lower risk stocks. And so vegetables have kind of traditionally been thought of that way. You know, but historically, when the dairies came into this area pretty extensively in the late 60s, early 70s, and through the 80s, a lot more feed crops started to be grown, more alfalfa, more corn, more silage crops. And those have been, for the last 30 to 40 years, a big part of the cropping rotation as well. And we're starting to see them come back with things like ethanol production, a lot of corn from the Midwest and other parts of the country going to ethanol production, dairies and horse personnel down in this area. Are looking for more feed, and so those are kind of coming back into vogue, I guess, if you will. If ethanol continues to grow as it will, I think that part of our rotation will, you know, continue as well. Pecans, again, is something that's they've been grown here for a long time, but not in the volume that we have now. You know, obviously people understand Stahlman Farms and those types of things, and this Olipak family has grown pecans here for years. Pecans are becoming much more, a crop of choice for a lot of our agriculture operations, again, because of the minimum amount of labor that you need. You know, even though they have an extensive, they use quite a bit of water, I won't say they're easy to grow. They're easy to grow, not necessarily easy to grow well, but they're easy to grow. So you can, once you get them in and take the cost of trying to get the orchard established, you can, you know, you can do okay, even though you might abuse them a little bit more than you probably should.
Could you describe the area here? I mean, just the land, the resources.
Well, as I mentioned, New Mexico has a tradition of having I won't say an abundance of land, but a significant amount of agricultural land. It was all river bottom land, if you want to go back historically. So it's pretty rich. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we can grow about any crop out there. The climate really works in our favor. Because of the items that I mentioned. So, that's good. But We do have some differences. For example, in the Midwest, where they grow a lot of grain crops, larger farms, larger runs. It's all dryland farming up there, so they don't have the irrigation system that we have here. But they can be more efficient in growing certain crops. Again, I go back to the corn and grain crops. Here, typically, our farms are a little bit smaller. Our fields are a little bit smaller, so they're a little bit more intensive as far as the operations have to go. Tractor gets to turn around every 700 feet, where in the Midwest they might not turn around for a mile, mile and a half. Puts a lot of pressure on the equipment and those types of things. So smaller farms, smaller acreage, not a whole lot of corporate farming in the traditional sense. A lot of people think of corporate farming as big the Doles of the world and those types of people. Not a whole lot of that. Most of these are family owned and operated operations, and they're the ones kind of still managing it. And again, historically, we're not seeing a lot of new farmers come into the area. Most of it is family operations that have been around for generations, and they've just been passed down through generations. It becomes more and more difficult to get into agriculture in that sense.
Mm-hmm. So you had mentioned that you're going to be talking to people about the water issues. Mm-hmm. And so could you kind of explain what you're facing here regarding those issues?
They're pretty extensive. I'll see if I can kind of get this into a succinct conversation maybe a little bit. But there's traditionally, New Mexico has had all the water that it wanted. The agricultural producers in the 20s, late teens, early 20s, actually build the irrigation system from Elephant Butte down. Actually paid for it, developed Elephant Butte Irrigation to work as a financer of the individual's development of the irrigation system. That's to provide the surface water that we have. And the groundwater has always been available to us. Years ago, you could basically go drill a well without anybody really paying a whole lot of attention to it. You could drill a well and take the water that you needed out of it. Obviously, as water becomes much more of a critical resource to people and the growth of the rural areas and commercial development, water becomes something that everybody wants and everybody needs, and so they look to agriculture to kind of supply that, assuming that agriculture doesn't need it or that we can be more efficient in the way that we use it. But there's a lot of misconceptions out there. The first is that agriculture wastes a lot of water and that it's not needed. Well, if you look at the economics of the state, you realize that agriculture is very important to the state. For example, I can mention this because I'm involved with it a little bit more extensively, but the chili industry supplies is basically responsible for $400 million worth of economic development in this state annually. So that's pretty extensive. Dairies is quite a bit higher than that. Pecans, same. So you can kind of go down the line. But the other thought is that agriculture wastes the water, and that's, I think there's that misconception is something that has been perpetuated by a lot of people that don't really understand the issue. Traditionally, we'll, in this valley at least, and for most of the state, we will flood irrigate or gravity irrigate. We'll open gates and water will go out into the rows and everybody sees it. And there's an assumption out there that water is actually wasted. Not really. That water actually, the majority of that water is going to go right back down into the aquifer and resupply the aquifers that we pump out of. 10, 15, 20% of that is going to be used either by the plant or be lost through evaporation. But as I mentioned, the majority of it actually goes back into the groundwater. I always kind of relate this back to at your house. You know, our parents used to tell us don't let the water run in the shower kind of thing. You're wasting water. It's going down the drain. Well, that water's not really being lost either. That's going back to the sewage system. It's being cleaned up and actually put back into the system. So that's not really a waste of water. Same thing with agriculture. It's not really being wasted. The evaporation is significant. It's something that can be saved with something like drip irrigation. But I think, the misconception seems to always be that we're actually wasting that water when it's being put out in the fields, and that's simply not true. The big issue that's going to come to pass here is what, when the state engineer tries to adjudicate the Lower Rio Grande Valley. Right now we have the right to use water, but we don't necessarily own the water. And maybe that's the best way to put it. Through the adjudication process, the state engineer will grant us ownership of what we have used historically in are in the growth of agriculture in this area. But there's not a lot of agreement as to what we have used traditionally and what we can use going forward. And so those battles have just begun, and I'm assuming that they're going to continue on for quite a while.
Okay. And where's the main opposition coming from?
Well, I think the state engineer is under pressure to be able to provide water both to commercial and residential development. And so I believe at least that he feels that he is under pressure to make sure that those water resources are available to those two groups. And he feels that he needs to take water from agriculture to give it to them. I think agriculture's stance would be that that we should be given ownership, or that we have a right to ownership of the water that we have traditionally used, the amount of water that we have traditionally used, historical values, if you will. And that's the water that we actually have. As far as supplying residential commercial areas, we feel like the free market system, for the most part, once that ownership is granted, will take care of itself. If the city needs water, it'll go to Farmer A and buy water from Farmer A. If Farmer A needs water for his crop, he can go buy water from Farmer B, and so on down the line. Rather than create a bureaucracy of trying to say, you don't need it, you do need it, you deserve it, you don't deserve it. I think that that's going to be problematic going forward. And really, the only way to do it is to allow the historical users to get or grant them what they have rightful ownership to, and then let market conditions kind of take it from there.
And is there a lot of development in the area right now?
Obviously, yeah. The Las Cruces, Doñana County area is seeing quite a bit of growth over the last 5 years specifically, and even before that, but it's become pretty intense the last 4 or 5 years. And agriculture is under a lot of pressure our farmers are under a lot of pressure. Prices keep getting squeezed. We have a lot of competition. The amount of the markets that are open to us are limited. So a lot of farmers, in a lot of cases, find it to be better to go ahead and sell out to developers. I guess from an agricultural standpoint, and considering that we're going to be in agriculture moving forward, or my family is, I don't think that we necessarily are opposed to development, just as long as the development is done, on a consistent basis, and it's done with some thought process for future generations, how things are going to work. Do we have the facilities and the infrastructure available where a new development is going to be going to go, or another mess here. If the infrastructure is available, are we developing in the areas that are I guess least problematic long term for some of the industry that we have in the valley? What we've seen in the last couple of years as land values increase in the cities or developed communities already, developers have pushed farther out. And so instead of filling in space in and around cities or small towns in southern New Mexico, they go farther away to get cheaper land, if you will. And that creates problems, because then you have roads and utility services and those types of things that you have to supply further out, making it much more difficult and much more expensive for community members to pay for. So hopefully in the long term, we understand the development's going to be there. And again, as I said, not opposed to it. It's much more that it's done in a systematic way, and that it keeps. I think the other thing that we should probably think about is that a lot of the reason that people want to move here is because of the beauty of the valley. There's nothing better than driving through Stallman Farms in the fall and seeing the colors changing on the trees, or the chili fields in the fall, or the springtime when things are just coming out of the ground. The first green out there typically is an alfalfa field or oat or silage field. So all those things play a big part in what makes the area attractive to people. And so I don't think that we want to lose that either.
Okay, and it's amazing how similar this sounds to the situation in Taos and the San Luis Valley. And
You mentioned that this is, I think the one difference is that, at least from my perception, you go up to Taos, and If you have a trailer and dirt roads next to a house, that's considered charming. Down here, it's called the Colonia, and you know, we have to deal with those issues, around that. And so, a lot of it's just perception, and how you can work through those things.
Okay.